A great business needs a stunning website. And with Wix.com, you can do it all by yourself. Wix.com makes it easy to look amazing online, no matter what type of business you're in. Show off your images in a beautiful gallery. Grow your contact list and get all your social media in one place, just the way you want. Your customers are going to love it. So, what are you waiting for? Show the world what you can do. Go to Wix.com and create your stunning website today. It's easy and free.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cicerino back here with one of our many off-season podcasts that we are going to do in the time between now and the start of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X. That's the first time I think I said that out loud. All right. And here today we are going to be talking about a subject which I think is very interesting to myself and I think a lot of the listeners, of how a reality show gets made or turned into a TV show after it's filmed. And joining us today here in the studio, someone who has become a good friend, longtime listener of the show. She is an established editor, 25 years and counting, editing TV shows and reality TV shows specifically. In addition to working on Survivor, she has worked in Top Chef, Project Runway, Last Comic Standing, a bunch of others, has two Emmy nominations and two ACE Award nominations. Please welcome our good friend, Molly Schock.
Yay. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Molly. How are you?
I'm great. I'm really happy to be here.
Very nice to have you here. And I think that also, just to add to your credentials, a huge, longtime Survivor fan,
yep,
that you are into it as much as anybody.
Absolutely. I'm a day one viewer. I came into it, you know, day one, first episode. I've seen every season. I'm on my second re-listen of The Evolution of Survivor. Listened to all the podcasts since pretty much one of the early ones, you know, five or six. And yeah, really, really happy to be a part of the patron group and really happy to be here today.
Okay. And listening to RHAP since Lex was on in Heroes versus Villains, over six years ago?
Yeah. Lex Vandenberg from Survivor Africa and Survivor All-Stars is a good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And he had posted on his Facebook page, like, hey, I'm doing a podcast with, you know, Rob. And I'm like, oh, that sounds great. Because I'm a freelance editor. And so that means I'm always moving, you know, where I'm actually working. And so you got to suss out who are the Survivor fans. So I don't always get that water cooler conversation. So
mm-hmm.
I was thinking, oh, this will be great. I get to listen to people talking about Survivor. So it was perfect for me.
For a long time, we've been talking about eventually trying to do this. And I felt like this would be a great point to talk about, you know, how this all gets made. And in terms of the edit conversation, because if there was any word that was talked about over the last couple of weeks, it was the idea of the edit.
Yes.
So I think that this would be sort of like a fun sort of look at, and not even necessarily with Survivor specifically, but just to talk about post-production of a reality TV show, because it's probably different in a lot of ways than people anticipate it's going to happen.
Absolutely. And if I can just make one quick caveat, yes, I have edited on Survivor and I'm super proud of that. It is my favorite TV show. But I was lucky enough to be brought in as kind of like a 1 month fill-in during Survivor 29. The guys and the editors that do Survivor have been on it literally for decades. And I in no way want to imply that I'm a Survivor editor. These guys are peers and masters and I admire them. And I don't want to put myself out there as a Survivor editor. But I can talk about editing reality TV. So I can talk about it as a Survivor fan and in the context of all the shows I've done.
Yeah. Well, and I will be especially careful not to misrepresent your resume in any way, shape, or form in terms of what we're talking about. But in terms of this conversation, you know, how did you get into this field to begin with?
I knew when I went to college, I went to Loyola Marymount University. I got a degree in television production. I thought I wanted to be a director because, you know, who goes to college thinking they want to be an editor? But what I learned is that I did not like being in the field. I did not like being on set. I liked being put in a room by myself for 12 hours with a bunch of tapes and leave me alone and I'll create something myself and be done. And I also realized I didn't have a burning story to tell that must be shared with the world, but I was really good at helping other people tell their stories. And I was fascinated with how editing could really heighten emotion or tell the story. So I knew by the time I left college, I wanted to get into editing. My first job, I got hired to edit promos for Baywatch. I did that for 5 years, among other shows. And it was a fantastic training ground because you had to learn how to tell a story in 26 seconds. And obviously, I'm not going to do that forever. So by the time I left there, I moved into documentaries. I was very into History Channel and biographies. And so this kind of documentary type shows that was coming out on television. I watched, you know, Survivor came on the scene in 2000. I didn't really get to my first reality show myself until about 2005, when the company I worked for created the show The Girls Next Door, which is the show for E!
About... Oh, I know it. Bro, I know.
Yeah. So it's a show about Hugh Hefner and his then three girlfriends, Bridget, Holly, and Kendra. Mm-hmm. And I loved it because I treated it like a documentary. You know, you'd have these talking head interviews and you'd try and find the stories. I was very lucky that that was my first show because, you know, this is 2005, 2006. And how the show was produced is, for, you know, as for example, they would film for about 3 months before we ever got our hands on the footage. And there would be what we'd call tentpole episodes. They're going to go on a trip. They're going to throw a party. And that'd be about half of the shows for the season. But the other half of the shows we'd have to find, oh, this person had to get their cat of the groomer and this one, you know, got her dog, you know, got a new toy, whatever. And so we'd kind of make a pet-centric episode, or we would find the episodes. And we were really lucky because we were allowed to look for the good stuff. Nowadays, not to jump too far ahead, so much is what I call soft scripted or pre-planned, where the story beats tend to be planned out, like, okay, you're going to react this way to this character, and it's kind of bad improv.
But just to be specific, that not in terms of shows like we're talking about competitive reality shows, in terms of like the unscripted Kardashian type, you know, celeb reality type shows.
And there's like, I mean, I hope I'm trying to, you know, keep the through line thread here. There are a lot of different reality shows. There are competition reality shows. And even that gets broken down to, is it, you know, something where you're in the field like Survivor or Amazing Race, or is it, you know, shiny floor competition show like The Voice or American Idol, or is it?
Is that what they call it? A shiny floor show?
Shiny floor competition show. Yeah. And then there are things like, you know, creating shows like process shows, you know, whether it's making sewing something like Project Runway, or I edited this show for Game Show Network called Skin Wars, which is same format as Project Runway, but it's body paint competition. Mm-hmm. So I really, really love the process competition shows. That's my favorite thing. I've tried to get away a little bit from doing what are known as the docu-soap, which is like the Kardashian or the Real Housewives. There's another genre called docu-follow, which is like Swamp People or Deadliest Catch, where it's not so much that these people are not told what to do, but it's more you've got to find the story. They'll film for a month while they're on the crab season, and then they'll come back and they'll go, okay, well, this boat had a story about electronics breaking down, and this boat had a story about something else breakdown. We'll have an electronics breakdown theme thing or a bad weather theme, and they'll pull from different days and make a show out of it.
Yeah. And so from working on those shows, you always were following what was going on shows like Survivor. Was that your goal to try to get into a competitive reality show?
Yeah. That is what I watch in my free time. So when I started to get to edit, I think Project Runway might've been my first competition show. And that was, I don't know, about 6-7 years ago. Mm-hmm. So that was a real thrill. I really loved working on that, and got to do a couple seasons of that, and same with Top Chef. So yeah, it's just, and the thing is, it's like you'll do something for a time and then you'll get another opportunity and the timing won't work for your wrap date or the start date. So, you know, you kind of move away and do different things. So, you know, it's hard to have any kind of consistency in this business. You've got to take the jobs as they come unless, you know, you're happy to just not collect money for a while.
Okay. So could you talk about the point in which the reality TV editor comes in? Because for the most part, I would imagine you're not out there in the field and you come in, the show has been filmed, mm-hmm. it's been recorded, and you have what, notes, or you have like a log of what's happened from the tape?
Yeah. And it can be anywhere from, you know, they've just finished wrapped. Like I know that Survivor, they wait till everything's been filmed and then they bring the editors in. On shows like Skin Wars and Project Runway, we were filming 5 days after they started filming. So we really depended upon producers who are in the field who take detailed notes of what's going on so we can kind of figure out where the story is. Like, oh, this person comes into the workroom and they're having trouble with their sewing machine, but this other person helps them out. Oh, okay, cool. Is that going to be interesting because, you know, John helped Mark, but now Mark beats John in the competition. So do we make that as an ironic point of conflict? Or does it never pay off? Usually what happens is so the story producers are there in the field and they'll take notes on everything that's happened. I'll talk about this as if it's been all filmed because you never know. It's much harder when they're filming and editing at the same time because you've got to just guess. Mm-hmm. And we will then go back and adjust it. So let's assume everything's been filmed. Story producers will come in and say, okay, here are our main characters. This guy's probably going to be the villain of the season. This is our winner. This is the friendships that develop. There's a big fight between these people. So anything you find that sets up, you know, we look for that. And most shows will have 4 to 5 editors working on one single episode. You'll have teams. Mm-hmm. So the team will get together and they'll break down. All right, you're going to take, all the competition stuff. There's two challenges. You're going to take those two challenges. One editor will take all the judges' commentary and the deliberation back and forth for like a Project Runway or a Top Chef. Another editor will take the back at the, you know, house, daytime reality. So we'll all kind of have our areas that we'll work on and we'll help out as time is needed or whatever. I would say for like a 1 hour show, 4 editors working, it takes a minimum of 2 weeks to get a 1 hour rough cut. And that's really fast. And that's it. But if you break that out into man hours, that's 8 weeks if one person did it, mm-hmm. to just get a rough cut. And that can be anything from graphics in, or we have to put all the music in. We have to put in all the lower thirds and, you know, if we're making jokes like, you know, Debbie is, you know, serve or whatever, you know, decide mm-hmm. if we're going to change that. That takes 2 weeks. Then we start getting rounds of notes. Takes at least another 2, maybe 3 weeks to get that. And depending on how well oiled the machine is and how much the network trusts us, hopefully it doesn't go beyond like 5 or 6 weeks. But again, if you break that out to 4 editors, it takes 3 to 4 months worth of manpower just to do one episode.
Okay, so the team of editors is all working with the one story editor. Is that how it works? Or are there cooks in the kitchen as well?
Usually there will be 3 to 4 teams of editors, all of which will have a story producer. And then there will be both a lead editor and a lead story producer. Mm-hmm. The lead story producer has to pay attention to the entire season and make sure that, oh, are we making sure we're hearing about, you know, this person's sick mom because they're going to drop out in episode 6 because, you know, whatever. So they'll make sure all the season stories are tracking. The lead editor, usually what happens is after each team has gotten the cut down pretty much to time, all the network notes, mm-hmm. it will then just go to the one editor. So at least there's only one final pair of eyes to keep the show looking consistent and sounding consistent. Like, oh, wait, we used that music cue just last episode. Let's swap mm-hmm. that out. So it is, with everything funnels to a point. The story producer, what they'll be, they've actually kind of taken on the role of an assistant editor in a lot of ways, because I'll be working on a segment where, I need a reaction shot of this designer looking over and looking pissed off because they just got a compliment from Tim Gunn. Mm-hmm. And I don't have time to just, I've got to match eye line, where they're standing in the room, how far are they along in their process? And I don't have time to spin through all those reels once I'm still trying to get the show done. So I'll ask my story producer, oh, can you get me a shot of, you know, Timmy, you know, mm-hmm. looking pissed off? I really want to hear from this contestant after this bit of reality happened. I would love an interview bite from Sherry saying, what she thinks about what, you know, that this person just got complimented when she thinks it looks like crap. Mm-hmm. So they will pull together bites. I'm jumping around. I feel nervous. the story producers will put together what are called Frankenbites. And I mean, a lot of people will say, oh, reality television, you're making them say it.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're not making them say it as far as they actually said these words. We will sometimes have to change context where, like, if the interview bite is, she's going to regret saying that, I need them to say, you know, Dawn's going to regret saying that. So I'll need to find a Dawn, and I'll need to find, you know, participles and syllables, little fragments, just to make it sound correct. And that's a real beast and an art we call it Frankenbiting.
Mm-hmm.
It's frustrating when you have to overwork it too much. I mean, I love when I can just leave a contestant up on screen for like as long as possible, because I think that's reality TV is just about, you want to have that voyeuristic experience. And if you lose that eye contact with the contestant because you're cutting away, I feel like you lose that immediacy, and but if you can watch them say something all the way through. I love it on Survivor when they'll finish a sentence and you can tell that's the end of the sentence, but they'll stay on them because they're really processing, and they'll start to cry or they'll add some other little thing at the end. But sometimes you've got to Frankenbite this thing, and it gets torturous when networks want specific things said, and we just don't have it because we can't go back to the island and pick it up. But you have to make it work.
So when you're watching the show, how quickly as an editor can you tell how good a contestant is at the confessional?
As a viewer, I think as a viewer, I can just enjoy it for its own sake.
Mm.
As an editor, I know a contestant is going to be good when they give me two things. When they do not begin their interview answering the questions with, so I'm going to do, because, oh, I hate that. So it is anytime you see a contestant say, so that's a lazy editor to me, because it's like nails on a chalkboard. So what makes a good contestant for me as an editor, you know, if they're animated, if they're not speaking in this kind of generic pablum, and if they end...
You hate the at the end of the days?
Oh, at the end of days. Or just anything that sounds, you know, repetitive. I love anything that sounds interesting. I had a fight with a producer recently on a episode where the contestant got kicked off, and it was their final words. And she was making, I have to mentally think of if this has aired yet or not. Yes, it has aired. She was just talking about how I'm really sad to be going home, especially because I'm going to be sitting on a plane for 18 hours. Because she was from Australia. And I just loved that was why she hated to go home, because she didn't want to get back on the plane. And my producer was like, well, that's just such low stakes. I'm like, but it's different. Mm-hmm. And so we won. So that was great. But what's really great about a interview bite, if they can find the period, because
mm-hmm.
I also hate when sentences end, or they're, you know, it's just that unfinished thought.
Mm-hmm.
But excuse me, one more thing. What's more important, and actually the bigger issue, they need to be able to give me options. Like if you say, you know, how do you feel your chances are? I would love if they say, I'm feeling super confident. This is the best thing I've ever done. And I'm totally going to win this. On the other hand, you know, I don't know. I didn't get great feedback from the judges, so I'm just going to have to hope for the best. So they give me options.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the best when they give me things I can work with.
So a lot of the people that listen to these shows, you know, tend to envision themselves, okay, one day I'm going to be on one of these shows. Would you say that as a way to say, well, everybody, I want to be on the show, and not only do I want to be on the show, I want to win, I want to get the most screen time. Do you say that that is something that, you know, a contestant, whether it's a Survivor, a Big Brother, or Amazing Race, any of these shows, is that a way that you would say?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely have energy. I mean, the people, because you get to the point in the season where you're like, I need a bite from somebody. Give me Michael. He's great. Like, he's always got the funny facial reactions. He always can deliver a quick sound bite. Energy is so key. I mean, I know these contestants are exhausted half the time, but it's so awful when you're like, I'm really excited to be here. I can't believe I won.
Mm-hmm.
It just kills me. So yeah, have energy, put periods at the end of your sentences, and give me options.
Okay.
And don't say so.
So when it's very hard to segue without saying
sure,
so.
Sure.
But that luckily when I edit my own podcast, I can clean up a lot of those things. But in terms of, you said it takes 2 weeks to do a rough draft for
a rough cut
for four editors. So then how long does it take from the rough cut to go? Because, I mean, if you have a show that's 10 episodes, 13 episodes, 14 episodes in a season, I mean, this is becoming like months and months and months to finish mm-hmm. a season of TV.
Mm-hmm. Typically, you know, a reality show is about, you know, 10 to 14 episodes. You can count on about 3 to 4 months of work. Like I said, there you have teams, so you'll start a different team every week. And so for however many episodes it is, let's say it's 13 episodes, it'll be 13 weeks. You'll start, you know, a new episode. So you like, they try and wrap them up by four, and then maybe they'll leapfrog some other people on. But yeah, it takes a Survivor takes about, oh, I would say about four months with 16 editors. Pretty much, so, you know, 16 times four, that's, you know, 60 weeks
mm-hmm.
To edit a season. So yeah, it's very time consuming. And that's just the edit. It doesn't get into the online editing where everything's color corrected and everything's mixed, you know, and we try and do our best
mm-hmm.
for like the mix and the music and stuff, but it can never be as good as if you've got like a real sweetening.
How close to air date then does an episode get locked?
I would say for Survivor, I would say probably a month because
okay.
they are a well-oiled machine. I was on a show called Swamp People. We once delivered a show on Monday that aired on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a nightmare because there's just no room for mess ups. And the network hates it because they don't have a show to promote, because usually when you see the commercials on TV, like next week on whatever,
mm-hmm.
That's not Survivor, or that's not the production company doing those. That's the network creating those from the finished show. And usually they have very, very little control over who uses what. And if you don't have a show delivered to air, you can't promote it.
Mm-hmm.
So you try and have like a month's leeway. Skin Wars, we wrapped that the end of January, but it didn't start airing until April. So we had a lot of leeway for that. You know, it just depends. Schedules change all the time. It's nicer when you can have, when you're not up against air dates.
That's an interesting thing you brought up about the coming attractions, mm-hmm. because just about every reality show has a next time on blank. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's always like the most exciting thing ever. But you know, there's people like, oh, I can't believe they showed me this in a coming attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Are the editors that work on the shows, are they the same people that are cutting promo for the upcoming episode,
They'll
or is that the network?
The network will do anything that is outside of the show.
Okay. So
like if it's running during football
this Tuesday,
yes. Don't forget Survivor. But the coming up next and the previously on, that's absolutely part of the show. And there are editors sometimes that are specifically hired to be in charge of that. There's a talent to it because I pay attention too. We saw this season Survivor like twice in the previously on, they mentioned a women's alliance. I'm like, oh, a woman's going to win. You know, I'm looking too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important because you want to remind what are you setting up to have the viewer pay attention to as far as what story are we going to tell? You're not going to talk about this person who that doesn't go anywhere. There's no point. You want to set the stage. It's like, you know, like going to the old movies and, you know, or, you know, Star Wars when they have the crawl, you know, it's mm-hmm. setting up what you're about to see.
Yeah. All right. Could we talk a little bit mm-hmm. about this idea that was talked about so much during the season of the idea of, okay, we're seeing certain things because this person is a winner. And for whatever mm-hmm. reason, it seemed to really reach a tipping point mm-hmm. this season with Michelle's win. In terms of putting a reality show together, like how important is that where we say, okay, we want to make sure we're getting enough in there from the person who's the winner and we want to see what they're doing at this point and checking in with them.
Yep.
How, first off, is that a thing that goes on?
It is a thing that goes on, but not to this, you know, Machiavellian, you know, puppet master extent that people think it does.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try and keep this succinct. There's two points I really want to make about the idea of the winner's edit. Of course, you have to show the winner. It has to make sense that this person won the show. Like if it's, you know, Survivor Samoa and they say, and the winner is Mick. You're like, what do you mean? I didn't see him do anything. That wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah, Russell did everything.
Of course he did.
Yeah.
So
just ask him.
So you have to edit the winner. And of course, as the show goes on, there's less and less people. So it becomes more obvious who the winner is going to be because you have less people to choose from. So yes, there is, you have to show why the winner won. The idea of, well, it was obvious Michelle was going to win because, you know, things were shoved in and they gave her confessionals. I mean, there is an element of truth to that. But I also like to think of it this way. People were expecting Michelle to win, and she did win. I would be very surprised if next season that happens. An editor only has to tell you the truth once to make you not know when you're being lied to. And editors lie. And not in a, you know, we're not showing you something that happened, but, you know, there's the classic, like, I'm never going to write this person's name down, cut to this person writing that name down. Well, sometimes like, oh, they did not write that name down. So it's like you put these big, bold statements in and you think, oh, well, that's obviously not going to happen. But then you get fooled. And that is the beautiful, delicate balance that the editors of Survivor do is, I mean, there were a lot of episodes this season like where I was convinced. If I was convinced at the beginning of the episode, I know who's going home. What's the point of watching? And even if it was the person that went home, they did such a great job of distracting us of like, oh, well, maybe it's not going to be that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about how much information do you give out and can I distract you this way and make it believable? That is what makes Survivor entertaining to me.
Yeah, this was a very interesting season of Survivor in that we had people from probably the fourth or fifth episode on saying, oh, winner's edit, Michelle's going to win. She had this winner quote. They showed her doing this. She's going to win. But on a week-to-week basis, I felt like this was a very unpredictable season. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that most weeks, you know, when I would predict who was going to go home on Tuesday with mm-hmm. David Bloomberg, I think I was wrong. I think Julia was the one that I might have gotten right throughout the course of the season. But other than that, I mean, it was a rather unpredictable season. And I feel like that a couple times, like going into tribal council, like, I don't really know who's going home in this episode.
I 100% agree. And I think Julia was the one that was like, oh, I think she's going to go home. But even that one, we're like, well, are they still going to pull it off? But again, that's the beauty of like, yes, this happens to be a season where the editors told you the truth that Michelle was going to win, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's, you know, Tom Westman had when he's talking to Janu That's what I just listened to recently on Evolution Survivor.
Yes.
And so when Tom is talking to Janu, he's like, and if we're not careful, we're going to be writing you the $1 million check. People could be pointing to that as a winner's quote for Janu. I mean, probably not. But I mean, if it's so easy to look back and go, oh, there's that person's winner. I mean, I bet you can go back to the beginning and find, I remember watching the opening of, Second Chances, and Tasha had a quote. I'm like, wow, that's a winner's thing. There are about three people that had winner's quotes. But once they're eliminated, you forget about that. And all you see is who actually did win. So it's this hindsight's 20/20, and it's very easy to say, oh, I knew that was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's there because we're telling the truth that they do win. Sometimes it's there because it's like, nope, they're the first one out.
Yeah, I bet that you must, though, have like a smorgasbord of like everybody, as Stephen likes to say, you know, everyone's the hero of their own narrative,
yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like that you must have all these contestants who are probably all to some degree like egomaniacal. And
are you,
like,
well, reality stars are egomaniacal? What?
I'm telling you, like, I got this one in the bag. Like, I'm going to win. You'll see. Like, I feel like there must be a lot of that.
I think every single person has a bite at some point that says that, which is great because we're going to need to use it somewhere. I don't think there's ever been a single contestant that has ever not said, this is my game. I'm here to win.
Mm-hmm.
Write my name on the check. Give it to me now.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're not going to air them all. So, mm-hmm. So sometimes we'll air the ones that do and sometimes not.
You should air a montage of every person
funny.
In
yeah,
the beginning.
That would be hilarious.
Of all the different people who are going to win. So do you feel like that there's a bigger misconception in terms of all this? Like, I'm sure you're very involved in the Survivor community.
Uh-huh.
You listen to all the podcasts. I mean, is there something that you feel like either that we're doing on the podcast that you feel like, oh no, we're getting this wrong, or you feel
no.
like in the community at large?
I mean, the thing is like, there's no real answer. I mean, is there a winner's edit? Yes. The person that won was edited. So yes, there's a winner's edit. Like I said, it's not this grand ploy to, I keep trying to remember to ask the editors that worked on season two, was not giving Tina a confessional, a deliberate choice or not.
Mm.
Like, that's where they were deliberately trying to hide it. I have not gotten a chance to ask them that. But the misconception is that there's one answer. I mean, it's like, you're all right. This is my favorite story to explain how my job works for editing. When I was editing Swamp People, which is a show about people that go out and hunt alligators. And hey, someone's got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's two men teams and it's driven by voiceover narrative. And we have to scratch out the voiceover and then that's recorded later. So we are writers as well. So this one particular scene, there's a hunter, Troy, who's kind of the star of the show. He is pulling up to a downed alligator line and the voiceover is Troy's nervous as he rolls up on his line. Now, is Troy nervous because A, his youngest son is helping him as a deckhand this year and that he's really inexperienced and that could be really dangerous? Is he nervous because in the previous scene, we just saw him make a bet with some other hunters of who's going to catch the biggest gator this season? Could this be the winning gator? Is he nervous because earlier in this particular episode, we've done a whole thing about how his lines have been poached? Is this, you know, the line's down, but is the alligator going to be there? Is he nervous because a couple episodes later, Troy gets a hernia and we need to kind of seed this like, oh, Troy's getting older. This is harder. Or is he nervous because there's an 800-pound alligator on the line? These are all true. All these things are true. But what are you telling at what point and how much emphasis do you give to each story? So, is there a winner's edit? Yes, there is a winner's edit, but how loudly is that being played? How obvious is it? How much is it deliberately hidden? You know, there's a million answers to that. So everybody is both right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great. I mean, I think you guys get it pretty right. The number one thing is they just want to tell, they want to make a good show. They want to make good television. They want to keep people entertained. They don't want to make it obvious. To the point where, I mean, like it's the thing. It's like they have to tell you the truth once in a while, Otherwise, you're always going to know that, well, if they say that, it's
like poker.
Exactly. You got to show that you were bluffing so that they'll call you other times when you've got the pocket aces.
Yeah. So we're going to do a podcast coming up here. I think next week on our summer off season schedule, we're going to talk about EDGIC and, you know, what exactly goes into that. Because, you know, we've talked so much about this during the season. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people don't really quite understand how that works. So we're going to do an episode where we're going to get into some of that. But from what I hear from you, and from what I understand, you know, in talking with different people along the way, whereas, you know, the EDGIC people feel like, no, you don't understand. Like, this is math. Like, we are that the numbers prove that this is correct. There's no denying it there. But what I hear you say, and what, you know, I hear when I talk to anybody who works in this field, is like, there's not a formula. It's not math. You know, this isn't math. It's more poetry or something that's much more abstract than something that is sort of like a hard and fast rule of we do A when B happens.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's you're exactly right. There are people that look for the winner's edit to prove they know more or they're right. And once in a while you will be. Sometimes you won't. But there is, it's not math. You're exactly right. It's not a formula. There's a lot of tricks we use. There's a lot of techniques we use. But it's not, we're not doing it to fool you or to, you know, hide the winner. We're doing good. We're trying to make good television and make it entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Okay. On shows like Survivor, there's a lot of use of animals and mm-hmm. like a different footage of insects and things like that. Is there any rhyme or reason why those things sort of happen, or is that
sometimes? I mean, sometimes there's there was a gorgeous shot, not an animal but a nature shot, in Second Chances. It's right after Steven, he's really down and blue, and he's I just need another break. And there's this beautiful wide panic. You're looking across a bay to this tree, and a lightning strikes it. And it was, I just laughed so hard when I saw that. And so editors look for those kind of things, whether it's, you know, a snake devouring a rat, or one of the scenes I edited on San Juan del Sur was the opening scene where they're coming back to the camp after tribal council. And I found out this, I just put it in because I thought it was cute, but it was these baby possums sitting on the back of a mom possum, but they were hiding. And this was the episode after Drew had been kicked off. And this was when Jeremy was hiding that he was actually with the women. So yeah, I'm like, oh, maybe this is like symbolism. Like he's hiding behind, you know, the mama. Cause there actually was a scene of Jeremy and Missy talking mm-hmm. about how they don't know I'm with you, Jeremy.
Or maybe it was foreshadowing for Second Chances when Jeremy was going to say, "Hey, I have another
baby."
Kid.
Exactly. I mean, there's a the beautiful thing about editing. There's a filmmaker called Eisenstein from the early 1900s, a Russian filmmaker named Eisenstein, and he's credited with coming up with the concept of montage mm-hmm. and the idea of combining shots so that the sum is, or the whole is greater than the individual parts. So if you have a woman, if you're looking at a woman who looks sad and you cut to a bowl of soup, oh, look how hungry she is. Or if you cut to a grave, oh, she's so sad. I mean, she can be none of those things, but you put those things together and now you've created an emotion. So yeah, editors absolutely are looking for anything they can do to get that feeling across or tie those extra layers together. That's when you can find that stuff, that's just the best. Doesn't always happen, but absolutely people are trying to do that. There's nothing accidental. I mean, we didn't just like, you know, oh, just throw in some B-roll of a leaf or a plant here. If you see a bird take off because they're scared, cause you know, Rupert's going to roar or whatever,
mm-hmm. you know, when you get the footage on the reality shows, I mean, do they still use loggers to go mm-hmm. through? And because I always felt like before I started getting involved with any of this mess, I thought that this would be the best job in the whole world when I was on Survivor the Amazon, I heard like, wait, there's a job where somebody just sits here and watches all these tapes.
Yeah, it's it's yeah, there are loggers that and again the loggers create more detailed field notes. So yeah, let's talk a little bit more. I didn't really get into this. So the producer in the field, they write the story notes.
Right. Loggers they always have a notebook.
Yeah.
Like sort of like scribbling stuff down.
Yeah. Loggers will then watch the actual footage because that we editors call it the producer had a bad case of field vision because the producer's like, oh my God, the most amazing thing happened. And we're like, we don't see it. It wasn't on camera. We didn't get it. We can't tell that story. So, you know, the loggers are actually watching what did we actually get? So those are really detailed notes. Then the story producer will come back to the office, the post-production office, and work between their own notes and the log notes, and they will create a rough string out. So let's say a scene plays about 4 minutes long, it's like a camp life scene. They'll give a string out. Maybe it's about 10 minutes long. You know, here's where they say this. Here's the interview bite you're going to want to cut to. And then we've got to, you know, pare that down. That's giving us kind of like the roadmap of where we need to go. That's great. We then throw it out. And then we as an editor, knowing what the producer wants, will rewatch all that footage kind of around that time period because we still may see things that the logger missed or will be processing like, oh, that look, you see, you know, Cerise looking, you know, over her shoulder over there. And like, you know, did she hear that information? Do we want to play it like she heard what was being said here?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to hear Cerise point of view. So we will then go back and say, oh, can I get this person's interview or whatever? So we'll do a cut. We'll put in music. We'll pare it down, pull stuff out, put other stuff in. And the producers trust us enough that they will just, you can do whatever you want at that point. It's like, oh, I shouldn't do that because the producer didn't put it in. So I shouldn't do it. We put in whatever we feel is best. We'll show that rough cut to the story producer. They'll give notes. We'll adjust. At some point, you'll have your supervising producer. That's like the one that's overlooking the whole show. And they'll watch the whole show and, again, give notes, decide when it's ready to go to network. And, yeah, it's just a constant back and forth thing. But mainly you are working with a story producer and your other editors because you've also got to check in. Sometimes you've got to check in with other teams like, hey, I found this this little bit of footage where there was an episode of Project Runway where I had jumped ahead. I'd done episode 4 and now I'm on episode 8. And all of a sudden, everybody's pissed off at this one designer and I can't figure out why. So I've got to go back to the other editors and say, what happened that now they're all mad? That, oh, they said that, you know, he was cheating in this challenge. I'm like, well, was he? And like, I don't know. And so now we've created this whole story beat that we had missed. So you always have to be in contact with each other and making sure that everything's getting told. So it's 100% a team effort.
Is the story producer in the field or the producer who's in the field just hands over what he or she did to the story producer?
It can be both. It's a little both. Sometimes, hopefully it's the same. Sometimes it's not like on Survivor. I was doing season 29. They'd come back. The field team was there for about 4 weeks to kind of cross over and download and then they took off again to film season 30. So there were other story producers that we were working with on a daily basis that weren't in the field. And they're calling and they're checking and everything. So it depends.
I know you haven't ever worked on Big Brother, but do you have any friends who have worked on Big Brother? And what is that process like in terms of post-production?
It is insane.
Where it's happening
crazy.
In real time.
It's crazy. I mean, it is, you have to really, really want to do it. Especially because if you start off, because they have 3 shifts running constantly. They have 3 8-hour shifts. And usually when you come on the first season, you have the graveyard shift. And you walk in the door and you're cutting this scene and you will edit for 8 hours with the producer in the room with you and people kind of running in and telling you, oh, these people are fighting or, oh, you got to change that now or whatever it is. But as soon as the 8 o'clock shift or, you know, your 8 hours are up, doesn't matter if you're done or not, you get up, the next editor comes, sits down, picks up where you left off. I mean, it is a machine. But it has to be because it's so much content.
And they're editing 24 hours a day?
24 hours a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
So like your third shift, somebody's coming in and editing?
Yep. It's usually like, I think it's like 8 to 4, 4 to 12, and 12 to 8, something like that.
Yeah.
They do it in Studio City, which is right near where I live, and just has never appealed to me.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone tells me like, oh, you'd love Big Brother. It's just too big of a commitment to me to watch.
Do you watch the show?
No, I don't.
You didn't watch the show.
I watched it a little bit like the first season with like Chicken George or whatever.
then you just got a bad taste from it. So that's interesting to me. So I feel like that what you're saying is like the reason why you enjoy editing is because you like telling your story, that you're sort of like going through the footage and finding,
yes,
as opposed to on Big Brother. It doesn't really seem like there's a ton of that that's going on.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, here's what the story is, mm-hmm, you know, put it together.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I got into this because I wanted to tell stories, you know, cue Jonathan Penner.
Well, great job, Molly. We could use you on a movie.
So sometimes it's making that puzzle work. If you've got to find what are you seeing when and can you do it? Do you have the camera angles? You know, that's why I also love anytime a great cameraman will shoot it. So like you can't see the mouth, like the head's just turned enough,
mm-hmm,
because that will allow the editor to, you don't have to worry about lip sync.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always makes me very happy.
Now, I'm sure that when you go through all of this footage and everything, I'm sure that it's probably like a lot of like really funny bloopers, mm-hmm, and things like that that probably don't end up getting to the show. Are there any sort of like funny things that you end up seeing?
Oh yeah, tons. And really interesting stories too. I got to edit the scene where Josh and Keith were on Exile Island together. And because that was also the episode where John Rocker and Natalie had a big fight. So it was a really tense episode. So I really wanted to make that kind of like, you know, odd couple, you know, like a Brandon and Frank odd man date night, mm-hmm, kind of thing. And so, you know, you pick music that is a little more, you know, that Nicole would probably call it the dodo music.
Mm-hmm.
We will constantly put in stuff that makes us laugh. I mean, God bless Mario Lanza and the Funny 115. That is just a love letter to editors because, you know, it can't just be all, you know, trumpets and tension and drama all the time. You want to have the light moments. And sometimes it's, you know, delivered by the contestants and sometimes it's completely manufactured by the editors. And it's great. Going back to Girls Next Door, I felt a little bad for this, but there was Bridget loved to eat cake. And we had like a whole montage of her just like eating cake one time because she literally just ate cake in every episode. It was a look back episode. And sometimes we'll have like the stupidest thing and we'll turn it into a whole scene, like Kendra trying a dress on and you put in sound effects or, you know, crazy music,
mm-hmm,
and it makes you laugh. I mean, there's a million things that never make it to air. And there was, just going back to when Josh and Keith were on Exile Island, Josh told this beautiful story about how, you know, he grew up in a very religious family, but, you know, he was trained to be very accepting and he understood that, you know, Keith might not like him or whatever. But it was this really great character piece. There just wasn't time for it. And it was, you know, Exile Island, which usually doesn't get a lot of love anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that I was able to make a funny scene, make, you know, my lead editor laugh, I felt was a good sign.
All right, let's take some of the questions that we got from the listeners of the podcast. And these are going to be things that you may or may not know, but maybe you could give us a educated guess on.
Maybe a hot take.
Speaking of hot takes, Dave Hunter wants to know, nice trick editing saying for Sydney, we don't need no more heat, baby.
We're in the middle of Koran. Like, listen, we don't need no more heat, baby.
And then she ends up losing a fire making challenge. Is that something that
I'm absolutely sure that was a conscious choice? Because it's like I was talking about, like if you can find those parallels, if you can make that match, it just enriches the experience. It makes it funny. It makes it on a different level. So yeah, I'm absolutely sure that bite was chosen because.
But isn't it just a great line?
It's a great line too. Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, yes. Number one, it's got to be a good line. But oh, how delicious is it that that's how she went out of the game?
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is a question from Amy Shapiro, who says, Does Molly think that the hardest season ever preview at the end of the Cambodia finale was a mistake, giving away all three medical evacuations?
I don't know if it was a mistake. It's not a choice I would have made. It's certainly maybe spoiled it for some people, but it did. It was different. And, you know, after 34 seasons, you need sometimes a reason to tune in. I mean, it was Brains versus Beauty versus Bronze too. So even that wasn't the novelty. So I wouldn't call it a mistake. It was a choice. Just like, you know, at the end of the first episode of season 29, there mm-hmm. was a this season on Survivor, which almost never gets done. And that gave away that there was going to be a quit. I wasn't a fan of that, but it's, you know, it's something different. So mistake is I think too hard of a word.
But I feel like that for the production, I feel like that for whatever percentage of the audience that we are who are online and listening to podcasts and going on places like Reddit and stuff like that, you know, it's a small percentage of the audience who is not going through and freeze framing different things. And okay, oh, I'm watching the finale and oh, here's a commercial for next season. Oh, three people are going to get medevaced. What percentage of the audience is going back and rewatching that scene halfway through the season? Say like, okay, that's going to be Joe. That's a nighttime. That's Joe. He's getting medevaced. I just feel like that to some degree, you know, people, you know, there's not a major concern for if you were going to look hard enough for these things. I think that sometimes they're just out there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, you could look back at, you know, how many votes were cast for second chances. Like, you know, we kind of felt like, oh, in the rehab community, oh, maybe, you know, 80,000 votes are being cast, and they said how many, it was millions of votes. And so that really kind of underscored, like, as even though we probably talk about 90% of the dialogue that's going on about Survivor, we're only a fraction of the audience that actually watches it. And CBS values Survivor. It's a valuable, you know, workhorse. It delivers great ratings all the time, and they want to show some, why should I keep watching this show to that other 90% of the audience? So, oh gosh, this is interesting. So that must be a tough season. So many people are going down. So, I'll make sure I tune in.
And so whether it's either they're doing these things and they don't care, or it's for the quote unquote greater good of getting a larger percentage of the audience excited about what's coming up.
Yeah, I would say it's for the greater good. I mean, it gives fodder also for Reddit and the forums to talk about and hash over. And that keeps the dialogue going in the off season. They got to talk about something. So if there wasn't something to talk about, we'd be mad about that.
Amy also wants to know, as an editor, how much did you enjoy watching the raw footage of Dan Foley at the Worlds Apart finale? Because how common is that for a contestant to like come away from a show, not even just from Survivor, but from any shows, like, oh, I definitely didn't say that. And like, you know, as an editor that you know exactly what they were saying.
I loved that they showed that footage. I loved it because I hear that every show I work on. Oh, you made me look that way. I'm like, okay, I enhanced what you already said, but I love that they show that because it does show like what we have to work with and, you know, how kind of boring a lot of it is. We've got to pull out the good stuff. Because there are always contestants that when I worked on the season, I think it was season 8 of Project Runway, there was one, the contestant that won got a lot of shade thrown at her, Gretchen. But I gave her a ton of credit because on Twitter, she was like, oh, wow, I should shut up. I can't believe I said that. She owned that. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. That really probably should be taken, would be taken badly. Of course, everybody hates me. And then there was other people who were like, I can't believe how they made me look. I'm like, oh, honey, I made you look good to this other particular contestant who I don't want to name, but, she was saying things like, oh, this person deserves to have their children taken away. I'm like, I don't want to put that on TV. That's just a show about making a dress.
Mark Percy wants to know, how much control do the editors have in this storyline, or are they basically given the story and they are told to put the clips that tell that story?
Yeah, we're given the roadmap, and we are trusted that we're going to make it better. And it's our responsibility to go through. I mean, if I only looked at just the string out and tightened that up, it'd be a pretty flat show. It's my responsibility as an editor to be familiar with all the footage and know what's there. And sometimes you find gold. I mean, did you watch The Jinx, the Robert Durst documentary?
I saw the first episode.
Okay. So I don't know if you know the punchline of that.
Yeah.
That little bit of audio, that damning bit of audio, was found by a diligent sound editor who listened to audio when the guy was off camera, thought he was off mic and using the bathroom. And he, you know, mm-hmm. it's the linchpin of the entire thing. And so had that editor not done that due diligence, that whole documentary would have just been nothing. You know, like, well, did he or didn't he?
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to know if whether it was you or a colleague were ever in a position where you didn't see eye to eye with the story editor about a character, where the story editor might have said, okay, no, this character is this way, but you in watching, or a colleague in watching the footage of a person, like, no, you don't get this person. They're actually more like this. Does that sort of thing come up?
Sure, it comes up, and it's mainly a you know, an atmosphere of trust and respect of colleagues, of like, you know, I'm really uncomfortable portraying this person this way, because there's reason, you know, here I can show how they're not that way, whether if they're being portrayed villainously, like, well, let's put this in at least to soften them up so they're not so mm-hmm. two dimensional. And, you know, there's people higher up on the food chains that will decide who wins. And that's the nice thing about being an editor, is like, on any given show, I will make 10,000 decisions between music and cuts and timing. So if I lose out on, you know, 10 edits, I won on the other 90,000. So
going back to that Dan Foley thing of mm-hmm. like the idea of the contestant walking away saying like, hey, I got a bad edit. As an editor, do you feel like, do contestants actually get a bad edit? Is that a thing that actually happens?
I mean, there are less flattering edits, but I think it's just a matter of a person not being aware enough of who they really are. I mean, I personally, and I think the majority of my colleagues, we try to be fair. We trust the casting. They were put on this show because they are just this person, and so we're going to portray the most enhanced version of that. And that's the thing, too. Let me just people get mad at reality television. I mean, I want to punch the person that came up with the term reality TV, because it's not reality. Mark Burnett himself says it is an unscripted drama. Some shows might be unscripted comedies or unscripted musicals, but reality television is surveillance footage. And that's just, you know, boring as heck. The second you edit anything, you have changed the reality of it. We are presenting an enhanced view of what events happen, a compressed time. We'll add dramatic music to make it seem more serious or comical. But the reality is not going to be us, you know, getting to know you and hanging out with you and, oh, this is the real Dan Foley or whichever character it is. This is what you said on the show. This is how you're going to be presented. And I personally believe that he was given a better edit than he could have been given. Just my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, so for every editor, so every person that thinks they got a bad edit, they are also usually protected, because there's just some stuff that you don't ever want to put out there that's just, it's just not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So we will protect them as well as highlight their foibles.
Okay. This is a question from Pia, who wants to know, do you think that the editing of Survivor has changed over the years from telling the winner's story to possibly featuring more short-term arcs of TV-friendly characters? And Pia also wants to add, also Molly, please tell all of your Survivor editor friends that they do an unbelievable job and they don't get nearly enough credit for it. And Pia is way into edgic, so that means a lot coming from her.
Well, let me give a shout out to the editors, like Brian Barefoot and Jim Smith and Plowden Schumacher and Dave and Jubin, and I mean these guys have edited for a minimum of a decade, and some all the way back to the first Survivors, and they're great guys. And I have a hell of a amount of respect for them. So I say hi to them for you. Do I think it's changed? I mean, I actually think it's gotten back to it. I one of the things I loved about early Survivor is like you got a little bit more personal stories. And then there was a time kind of in the mid-20s when it was all about strategy. And I feel we kind of lost some of the personal stories. And I kind of feel we've gotten back to that. Like I really feel like the last four or five seasons, we've gotten more personal story arcs. So as far as the editing changing, everything evolves and, you know, people get better or worse or things get, you know, tastes change, you know, whether, you know, it's Jeff being involved as a producer now and he wants to see certain things. I think that Survivor's done a great job of being pretty consistent, of throughout the years, and you know, and things will be wacky sometimes, like there'll be the Survivor China when they had the rope chop challenge where they would do like the kind of kung fu freeze frames and stuff, and again that's just editors having fun.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll do those kind of wacky things like on your season when they had like this weird dream sequence, you know. Mm-hmm. That every once in a while something will be interesting, and you know, but for the most part I do love when they can tell the personal stories, and I do feel they're actually getting back to kind of what Survivor used to be, is learning about these different people.
Billy Gross has a fun question. Since you're one of the few people that would know,
okay,
if Survivor live feeds are as boring as everyone says they are, should fans start petitioning for them to be shown or not? Because this is something that I always have heard about for, you know, for 15 years. People say, why can't we get the live feeds of Survivor? We would pay to watch the live feeds. Just let us watch the tapes. Let us watch 2 hours of Tribal Council. Let us watch all of these things. What do you think?
I mean, there's always going to be people that are going to dig that. It's not my thing if I'm not actually being paid to watch all that stuff. There's two great scenes I can think of that show how boring Survivor can be. One is in Australia where they're watching the fire. And they're just sitting around watching. It's like, there's like final five or four. And then there's like this long pause and like a log falls. And there's a pause. And then Colby reaches over and puts a log on the fire. I mean, it'd be like 2 hours of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is, I think it's the fourth episode of Russell Swan, the second time he came around with him in Malcolm.
Philippines.
Okay. It's the beginning of that episode. There is like a 2 minutes of silence. There's no music. You just hear the rain. And this is the tribe that's, you know, Matt Singh has lost. And it is raining drizzly and there's no fire. And you, this 2 minutes, it's some of my favorite editing on the show. You really feel like how miserable these people are. And it's only day 12. And that is just like them waking up in the morning and how exhausting this must be. And then, okay, let's watch that for another 8 hours.
Mm-hmm. Nah. You feel like there's a reason why sometimes they turn the camera like, oh, look, a caterpillar.
Yes.
Let me film that for a while. Let me get that.
Yeah. If you're really into Survivor, I mean, it's a novelty, but I can't see it being anything that would be worth doing.
I could just tell you from being out there, like it is really boring most of the time. Like there's like fits and starts of like, okay, there's like a lot of excitement going on right now, but there's just a lot of just like, what do you want to do now?
Yeah. So it's not for me. I don't think it would be a viable thing to do.
Okay.
Maybe tribal councils, but you'd probably never see.
Lisa Stranger wants to know, do the opening credits mean anything, or are the order and photos used just selected because they work well?
They work well. And I got to say, there's a former editor, still edits, but his name is Sean Foley. He used to edit the show. He cuts every season's. I think this might be the first season he did not cut the opening title sequence. He's moved on. He now he's a showrunner for like Whale Wars. And I mean, he's a fantastic editor, which I think makes him a great producer. But you did a podcast one time, I can't remember with who, but it was about the odds of like statistics. It's like statistically, the first person in the title sequence has never won Survivor. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. And I shot a note to Sean saying, hey, I know you're working on Second Chance's title sequence right now. I'm just going to give you this information in case you want to play with it. And he's like, oh, that's interesting. And so the first person in the title sequence was Kelly Wigglesworth. Well, I was like, ooh, is Kelly going to win? No. But Sean told me one time that
who was first this time?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember. But Sean told me what he does.
Mark the chicken, I think.
Yes. Sean told me that what he does is, because there's usually like a slow motion shot of them doing something and then a nice billboard shot. And the shot of them doing something, he tries to find something that's maybe part of their character. Like if they're a provider, you'll see them, you know, like, you know, hauling down a huge, you know, coconut tree or beast moding through a challenge. Or if they're, you know, they're more the heart of the thing, you'll see them kind of like the lip quavering, looking off into the distance. So he does put those together with an eye towards trying to give you just a little bit more of information about that player.
Do you know what it was of me in the Amazon?
What was it of you? I don't remember. I don't. Do you? You must.
I was rowing the boat, just to, you know, classic me, just rowing.
That's so you.
It's so they I mean, they captured me so much, just like rowing.
You were steering the direction of the show.
Yes, I think so.
There you
I
go.
Think so. Okay. One more question. This is from Justin Feinberg, who wants to know, how conscious are the editors of running themes? Example from Ko Rong being Propes directly saying that the theme of the season is no matter how bad things may look, you're never out. And no matter how uncomfortable you feel, you're never safe. Then Michelle won after being consistently portrayed as being on the bottom, with her insinuation being that things look bad for her, but she was never out. Another example is that after episode 3 and Emotional Intelligence, where the women were portrayed as having emotional intelligence and many men minus Ty were being portrayed as lacking it, the winner was Michelle. And the whole reason was that it was a woman who explained emotional intelligence. Is this a coincidence or is there something to this?
That's a pretty deep theme to have. I mean, maybe, I editors will look for if they can find little moments to try and sell a story. But I don't think that they went, well, okay, Jeff said this is the hardest season, so we have to constantly show somebody who's playing the hardest or playing from behind. That's something that goes back to like the whole Eisenstein thing, is you see what you want because of what shots were put together. But yes, they're looking for themes, but I don't think it is so deliberate all the time. And you are constantly looking for like, how can I show that this person is scheming or plotting or whatever. I'm doing a terrible job answering this one.
But I think that Jeff says like some fortune cookie type stuff in almost every episode. And I really feel like it's sort of like a Rorschach test, like at the
there
end
you
where
that's,
you can
that's
sort
more,
of like say
random,
like,
yeah.
Oh, well, Jeff actually said in episode 6 that, hey, don't give up because you got to make a big move to win this game. You know, you
that's
can
a much better answer.
And at the end, it's easy to find something to say like, oh, he must have been talking about this.
Yeah, exactly. And again, that's part of you want that. You have to have a winner that makes sense. I wrote down, I listened to your Richard Hatch interview earlier this season, and you were asking him to make a prediction of like, who do you think it is? You know, this winner's edit. And Richard said that he respects the show too much to make a prediction. Editors don't want to spoil the ending, but like a good mystery writer, you have to be able to look back and see how it was done, or the audience feels cheated.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciated Richard saying that. And so, yeah, like if you look back and you say, oh, well, it's because of this, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But if it makes sense to you, great.
Okay. And then actually one more question. Dave Backer wants to know, what would you like to edit that you haven't already done, TV, film, et cetera, and why?
Well, I'd love, obviously, to get back and cut Survivor any day of the week, if they'll have me. John Hurt, if you're listening. I would love to try my hand at comedies that are like The Office, you know, things that feel like a documentary. Like, I have a lot of friends that have kind of made the transition from reality to scripted. I think my natural instincts are more for comedy than for drama. I'm I'm good friends with an editor named Kelly Dixon, who is your competition for one of these podcast awards. She hosts the Better Call Saul podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to be able to go in and watch her work, but I don't think that that's a style of show I'd want to edit. I think I'd rather do a comedy type show.
Well, Molly, is there anything else that you want to touch on that we didn't get to talk about?
I'm sure there's a lot. I mean, I wish I could. That's the thing about editing is there is a lot of information to process, and there is no right answer. You can only make it better or worse.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a million ways of turning out information. So I'm hopefully this is enough to kind of answer a lot of questions I know that have been floating through the forums, asking about editing. I love my job. I love what I do. If people want to reach out, I don't really tweet, but I do have a Twitter handle. So I have, Molly Shock. If they have questions about editing or something I didn't answer, I mean, like I can't speak to specific stuff on Survivor, but I can talk about editing. I'm super thrilled to have been here. I mean, I remember watching you on the show, so it's very cool that you have created this whole community. I've become friends with various people in the community.
We did an Escape the Room recently.
That's true. We did. I love
it. Really made short work of that room.
There's a tiki themed one that I want to get a group together. I want to get
with the tabulator.
Yeah, and get Miles Nye, and I've gotten to become friends with him now, mm-hmm. and because he's also into these. So thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here and be a part of this, and hopefully people found it informative.
Okay. I have a hashtag. What do you think of hashtag shiny floor?
Hashtag shiny floor is awesome.
Yeah, that's great. All right. And then anything else?
Thank you so much for all you do. I'm amazed at what you've been able to create for yourself, and I couldn't be happier for you. So thank you for asking me to be a part of it.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming in. I'm glad we were able to do this. We've been talking about this forever. So very happy to do that. We've got a lot more coming up this week on the podcast. I am going to soon have an interview with our own favorite soundbite queen.
And I'm like, brr!
Sydney will Yay. Be here on the podcast. We're going to be talking with her later on this week. We're also going to have an interview with, I know you're not following Big Brother US or Big Brother Canada, but Mitch Moffitt is going to be on the podcast this Friday. We're going to talk with him live at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. So looking forward to that. And then we're also going to catch up with Michelle very soon, plus plenty more Survivor off-season podcasts on the way, trying to go for two a week over these next couple of weeks up until the point we get until the start of Big Brother. So looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say about this conversation on robinswebsite.com. Take care, everybody. Have a good one.
Bye.